From a secret location in room 100 of 540 Jack Gibbs Boulevard, this is Craft. I'm your host, Doug Dangler.
Columbus authors Diane Callahan and David Dixon have released a new poetry collection called The Ship in the Storm, and they join me today to discuss it. Welcome, Diane and David.
Hi.
Hi there.
Thanks so much for having us.
Yes,
sure. I'm happy to see local authors get some stuff out there in the published land. Tell me about the collection. The preface mentions that you wrote the pieces jointly with a lot of discussion.
Yes, absolutely. I'll let you take that first.
So the pieces are sort of in conversation with each other. They're not direct responses in terms of the way the poems are arranged, but the poems sit across from one another on the page. They're either linked by theme, topic, or approach in terms of the way the poems are constructed, or they're poems that illustrate particular worldviews on a subject. They're sort of poets in conversation.
Okay. Yes, and I think that there are some poems that are more directly related, because maybe half of the poems we wrote before the collection, and then we wrote new poems for the collection. There is a poem of mine called Some Changes May Not Be Saved that references Dreams of the Coringall, which is his poem that I paired it with. I wrote it independently, referenced just because I was thinking about it. It's a poem addressed to him. When I was doing the collection, I was like, well, those will naturally pair together because like it's literally referencing that other poem. So there are a few poems that you can see the direct link more, and then some of the other ones are a little more abstract and that they take a bit more thinking about the pairings. Like there's one that is like a hermit crab poem. Like I wanted both of us to have a hermit crab poem as a form, which is taking the form of another piece. He has his poem Nine Line, which how would you describe what a nine line?
I'm a veteran, and nine line is the call for, in this case, the nine line medevac call. So a call for evacuating folks who need medical attention. Diane wrote her hermit crab poem, care instructions. And then I wrote one at her request, insistence, however you want to put it. I wrote a poem that uses a similar kind of form structure.
Yes.
So I've never heard of hermit crab poetry before. I like the idea of it, although I'm going to be making a lot of seafood-based jokes, I think, anytime I hear a hermit crab poem. So it sounds like it's a Lennon-McCarthy situation where both of your names are on the poems, but that's not necessarily how they arose? Is that an accurate assessment?
Yeah, so there's that in the table of contents, we have like our differentiating symbols, which, so in the collection, this is something people might miss, but they might notice as they're going. So they have like this little wave is mine, and then the little like compass is Dave's.
Okay.
And then so those are above each poem. So you could kind of tell if you wanted, but at the same time, when you're reading it, you might not like go back or think about that. So they're separate enough. But I mean, we do have poems that, like I said, like I was like, oh, I wrote a poem about my mom. Go write a poem about your mom. That's for me, my August poem about my mom. And then his is the Christmas poem. And so like, I think, and there's other ones where you wrote a poem and then I was like, oh no, I don't have anything to pair with it. So I need to write something to match it, even if they're thematically linked in a small way. We're more riffing off each other, like improvising, like jazz.
As is a sub-theme in quite a few of those.
Is there a poem you'd like to share that you think maybe embodies some of these ideas that you're discussing?
So I think the best way to do this is we'll read a pair of poems. Diane will read her poem, and then I'll read mine, and you can see how the pairing works.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, and this is, for me, the opening poem of the collection.
And my opening poem as well.
Yes. Okay. It was kind of the tone setter for the collection. So mine is called The Patterns, the Contradictions, after Lucille Clifton. I am swimming into myself over and over again, lover to the riverbed, cold, so cold, but smooth. I am walking alone at night, walking into the near future, where no one holds my hand, with fear of losing me. I am talking to ghosts, made lighter in light of secrets lost, a translucent ghost talker. Goodbye, thinning hair, shoelaces I keep tripping over. I am leaving breadcrumbs of hurt behind me, leaving the staying place to carve desire paths through my life.
My companion poem is called Go Toward What Makes You Feel Most Alive. So, go toward what makes you feel most alive is what I got when I asked an author to give me some life advice. And it's good advice, don't get me wrong. But I think it's the sort of clever advice that means different things to different people. As for me, I was once in a country so far across the expanse of geography and history that it was on another planet. And under a moon most malevolent and unfamiliar, I stumbled into a ditch of waist-high weeds, backlit by the pyre I had only just escaped from. My face and their faces cast in white and orange by muzzle flashes, ours and theirs. The zip, zip, zip of death nipping at our ears as it passed, and the snap and snarl of the death we sent back to them. And in that ditch of weeds, I felt alive, most alive.
So yeah, I see some differences between the
Very
two.
much so.
And you address that in your preface, in which you describe Diane as a poet who values beauty and language and metaphor and imagery, while Dave is a more obvious poet, your words, I believe. What were the discussions like that arose from being so seemingly different as poets, one loving beauty and language and one saying, I want it to be clear to people, because the next question obviously is going to be about form and meaning.
Yes. Are you going to take this one first too? Because I'm so curious to hear what you say.
The preface, we mentioned that a lot of email exchanges and discussions happened around all these poems. Diane and I critiqued each other's poems and edited them. And we had another editor come in and look at our poems. There was a question where I asked Diane, why are you so obsessed with form? There were times she would write, and I was like, well, that's beautiful, but what does that mean? What am I supposed to get from that? She snapped back at me, why are you so obsessed with meaning? Right. And so that's a good question. I think we addressed it by trying to polish each other's poems in the best way that we could in what we felt our strengths were. For Diane, I would say, well, that's a beautiful phrase, but if you don't tell me what it means, I think you should get rid of it. And then she would challenge me, like, it's clear what you're saying, but that's not strong poetically. That's not a strong piece. And so we really played off each other's strengths that way. In the end, our own personalities show through. We can't become another poet than we are, but I think we've got the best version of ourselves through that sort of cooperative, competitive, contested process.
Yes, it's a good type of challenge because I think like it's nice to collaborate with somebody that challenges me creatively because we're also critique partners in fiction and that's kind of where we started. And so I knew that it would be a fun collaborative process in the sense that Dave doesn't let me publish mediocre work, and that's nice. And the same for him very much. I don't let you publish mediocre work. Part of it is knowing our strengths. So like Dave is sometimes very straightforward. And I'm like, I want some more nuance, some more complexity, or the things with form. Hey, try something experimental and see what shakes out. For me, it is looking at poems and being like, okay, that's just too abstract. One of the phrases I did keep that was a contested phrase was like I because this poem had already been previously published. So it's my poem Micro Expressions. I mentioned I dread the day your side mouth impressions rye as a country song slip from my ridges. And the slip from my ridges is a reference to the brain. So he's like, well, what is the ridges? And I'm like, well, it's the sulci and the gyri, those things are ridges and troughs, you know, and troughs and dips and things. And he's like, well, not everybody's gonna know that. I'm like, it doesn't really matter to me because it's more the feeling of it than the literal meaning of it. And so there is some of that in there, but I did appreciate the challenge to be more like direct because today's very good at rewriting things for me as well. Even the preface was something that we had originally wanted to be like a transcription of a conversation. And then I read it and I was like, oh, it just feels really forced. It's not the right tone. And then Dave rewrote it into the form that it is now, like more of a statement and like summarized everything that each of us had said and then made it cohesive. Cohesion is something that you do really well in both fiction and poetry.
When you read that, what came to my mind was the ridges of your fingers that it would slip through, and you were being really specific about a very small detail. But now that it's the brain, I see the difference between the two of you.
I feel
Yes.
vindicated.
You feel vindicated. Well, I also think I like ambiguity in poetry. Like, I think that's part of its strength is like you can interpret the same line or like how things are juxtaposed or like and jammed, like, you know, your line breaks. Like, those create ambiguity, and ambiguity is actually a good thing in poetry.
In poetry, it is.
I can see the disagreement brewing here. Ambiguity is good, but you need meaning. And I was curious, you take inspiration from a lot of different things in here, including a Soundgarden song that I'm more familiar with, the Johnny Cash version of Rusty Cage. So when you're picking or struck by something and taking inspiration, how often do you have to look at what you're picking and say, will enough people know this? Will this work with it? Because as Diane is saying, she's fine with the ambiguity. If you don't get it, you'll get the next poem.
I think for us, Diane references ephrastic poetry, where you're referencing another work of art. My ephrastics tend to be music. Diane references more other poets, I think, art, also
Visual
art,
art.
visual art. I don't think we necessarily ever said, would somebody get this reference or not?
Interestingly, yeah, and I think it's because the way that we read is that we're both big readers of poetry and of fiction. In the books we tend to read, they reference things with no embarrassment or regard for the reader's understanding of that experience. And
Right.
like, for example, like Sylvia Plath's Ariel, I remember reading that and I was like, oh man, I feel like most of this is going over my head. Like I had to look up references, particularly things that are mythological or biblical, things that I might not have a personal background in. And then it helps deepen your understanding of the poem, but there's different layers of experience. Like, okay, I can experience this without knowing what it is. And if I do understand it, there's another layer of understanding. Sometimes poems have a specific audience. Like my poem Watch Me is about like early 2000s video games with my brother. So there's references to The Sims and Spyro and like so stuff like that where I don't mention the names of the games directly, but if you know, you know. And that's really less important. It's more about the feeling of the poem. I don't expect readers to connect with every single poem. I hope they find a few that they're like, yeah, that resonated with me, with my experience, or it made inspired me to look at something new. So yeah, it is interesting that we did not consider the reader's knowledge base per se,
No,
but
also her poem is after Lucille Clifton. If you were curious as to what that would meant, you could go look up and find out Lucille Clifton is another poet, or I wrote a poem in response to a Stephen Crane poem. And so I don't think we necessarily considered whether or not the poem should hopefully stand on their own, even if you haven't listened to Rusty Cage. The Johnny Cash version is really good too. That's how we did.
And the takeaway for me was that I began listening to that song again and singing it badly in the car. So that's on you.
There's also a Sonic Youth reference in there too, so not in that poem. So if you want to go back to the 90s, I'm right there with you.
Yeah, okay. Diane and David, I want to thank you very much for talking to me today. Again, the book is called The Ship in the Storm, and I'll put links to your website online. Good luck with that, and I hope that your career as Columbus-based poets takes off and has a ton of success.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For more information from my guests, visit www.craftheshow.com. This is Doug Dangler. Until next time, be creative.